Shalom aleichem.
Aleichem shalom. Okay, nice
thanks for coming
you.
Out.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I'm sure Rebbe Sinai gave you a perfect orientation, but you know, we have people here, we have people on the computer, and
okay.
And then Mikoros, they work for you. We have what you need.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. All right, so I'm just gonna.
What time
check
do we
sponsors.
Go into? What's the schedule?
10 to 12.
Yes, Rebbe Angel starts at 12 punctual, so you can feel free to let everybody out 5 to 10 minutes earlier.
So I go till.
I'd like to 10:50. I'm sorry, to 11:50, and then
yeah.
and I leave room for questions. And,
okay. So I'm just gonna...
All right. So good morning, everybody, and welcome to the first week of the second trimester. I want to thank our two sponsors for this week, Mr. Sai Shulman, who spent sponsoring in memory of his wife, Rachel, Rachel Volda, Bas Yaakov, and Yamin Misarabaya. The Yortzeit was observed on the 24th of January, and also Steve Akerson, who was with us this morning. He's sponsoring in memory of his father, the Hyman Akers, for many, many years in Aurora, Noah, and Rabbi Yeshua, which is Boba Yom, the 29th of Shvat. So we're very privileged that this morning to have with us Rabbi Shiva, the Al-Fanan, that I would like to introduce through the prism of a comment that Rashi makes at the beginning of the session that we just read, which Bhattan, based on the Gemara here in Adat Mandalit, about what are the responsibilities of a Malami, what are the pedagogical responsibilities. And Rashi says that a Rebbe shouldn't think to himself, you know, my job is to communicate, you know, once, twice, three times, and so the Talmidim says they know things by rote, and they can repeat things to repeat whatever they say. Really have any understanding, certainly no depth of profundity. And rather, the responsibility is to v'havinam ta'amei hadavar. They should understand things very, very well, what the Rambam calls onka shel halacha. And that is where we have the expression to shulchan ha'aruch, to set it up like a table, which is set. Interesting that Rashi uses in that context. I shouldn't burden myself, but this is a difficult one that extends my generosity. I'll just teach you once, twice, three times, and we'll be okay. So think about that Rashi, and this comes from many years ago, which I think is still, I'm sure, quite relevant. I don't know anybody who lives up to this ideal more than Rabbi Simon. When I was a student in Reitz, you should very often see on the fifth floor of the Gottesman Library, I know they've done construction since then, Rabbi Simon taking so much of his time to make photocopies, literally photocopies of all the Makoros, 50 Makoros, 60 Makoros, 70 Makoros, whatever it was for the shiur, just to call me then, so they wouldn't have to get up and get the book, that they could maximize their learning time. And that was the quintessence of somebody who was Matria Atzmo for his Talmidim, not just Lahavinam, Tamei Hamikra, but in the basic level, so that they should have access to the books and have to, you know, be the best of their own time, even at the expense of the Rosh Hashiva's time. God, what a pattern.
Thank you, Rabbi Friedman. Thank you, Rabbi Feldman. All the chashuv people who are here to attend the learning. It's a big schus to be here to share some divrei Torah, and feel free to ask questions. As you know, I'm not the lecture style person. That's another part of me. Besides, I'm a big Xerox person, as Rabbi Friedman mentioned, and I like the fifth floor of the Gottesman Library, but I also, part of the Lima Torah, you hear me? Part of Lima Torah is the interaction. It always makes it more interesting to hear what you're thinking about and what you want to discuss, so feel free to do so. Okay. So the topic of today's shiur is Bishul Akum. And Bishul Akum, in a certain way, has certain complexities because people have the mindset, if the food is kosher, why can't I eat it? You know, everything is kosher. You know, and there's certain areas in halacha where even though technically everything is kosher, still we're not allowed to eat it. You know, like I'll give you an example, milchik bread, something like that. So milchik bread, so it's milchik. I know what milchiks are, so I keep milchiks. But why can't I eat milchik bread? Well, Chazal made a gzeira because bread is something that normally is parv. And if you're going to have milchik bread, the next thing you're going to do is you're going to put a hamburger on it, thinking that it's parv because bread is normally a parv thing. So Chazal said, even though it's kosher, right? There's no non-kosher ingredient involved, yet Chazal went ahead and said, we forbid it. And the same thing by Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum is technically kosher food, and kosher, everything is, you know, there's no treifus, there's no chazer, etc. But we're afraid that if we start eating the food cooked by a non-Jew, that will create a level of camaraderie and ultimately cause intermarriage, etc. And that's part of this whole discussion. So therefore, even though, quote, it's kosher food, it's not, nothing was treif ingredient that was put in. But, and there's another, as Rabbi Gedak likes to point out, there's another reason given that maybe we're afraid that the non-Jew would add something non-kosher in it, but these two ideas of intermechasnus and the idea of having non-kosher food being mixed in, as Rabbi Gedak pointed out. So even though it's, you see, when it comes to the level of derabbanans, that Chachamim were afraid of certain consequences that could come about, they said, okay, now we're going to treat this as macholas asuros, even. We're going to treat this as something that's non-kosher. And therefore, you would have to sort of discard it if this would happen. I remember once, not too long ago, I think it was Lag BaOmer, you know, Lag BaOmer trip. And I got a phone call from a certain yeshiva high school principal or something like that, who I have connections with that school. And they called me up to say they got to the site of where the, you know, where they're supposed to be, ready to have their outing for Lag BaOmer. When I was a kid in Lag BaOmer, it always rained, so, you know, but okay, it didn't rain, so they were doing well from that perspective. But then they got there, and they had the caterer, etc., involved under a very reputable hashkacha. And all of a sudden, what happened was that the food was already cooked. The person, the chef, whoever was there, cooked the hamburgers and things like that, and it was already ready to go. So great. The only problem is this person who did the cooking was non-Jewish, and he cooked all the food. And now the kids, you know, where's going to be lunch? You know, you're on this Lag BaOmer outing or whatever, I think it was Lag BaOmer, and all the, now what? What should we do? So that was the question. What should we do? I mean, there apparently wasn't another option. It would mean to tell the kids there's no lunch today. And what about the Rebbeim? What do I do with the Rebbeim? So the Rebbeim were there. The kids were there, and I was on the phone. I had a lunch that day, but what's with everybody? And the simple pshat is that the food was not good, because the first thing we learned, Dover she'enu nechal kamo she'u chai. If something like certain things you could eat raw. Right, you could eat raw, and it's good. And so it's carrots, you eat raw carrots, or you cook carrots. But things that are eat raw, so you don't need it to be cooked. So even though you decided you want to cook it, you could still eat it since it's edible, even raw. So even if it's cooked, even cooked by a non-Jew, that would be permissible. That's one of the main heter. But that heter doesn't apply over here, because I don't know how much many people eat raw. The raw hamburgers, I don't know, raw meat. The baseball players, they say. They say, well, Mickey Mantle used to have raw meat for breakfast or something. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if that's, you know, generally we don't eat, you know, the raw meat. And and then we have another thing. So one heter that's given, these heterim, if you look here on this page, so you have carrots. So it's nechal raw, so then you can, it's no problem, bishul akam. But something that's not eaten raw, so then the bishul is meaningful. So then you can't eat it if the guy cooked it. Vagam ola al shulchan melachim. Lafes boas apas. And also things that are ola al shulchan melachim, meaning it has to be something that's chashuv, that a melech would serve. The simple pshat means a melech would serve at his banquet. Or the way the Rambam seems to interpret it, something that's chashuv enough that I'll invite you over to come eat something with me. But if it's something that's not so chashuv, we'll have to see what's an example of that, then it won't have the din of bishul akum. But a piece of meat, like the case I just gave you, you know, probably is olal shulchan melachim, maybe. But those are the two main heterim that are given in the Gemara. That it's if it's something that's eaten raw, then there's no din bishul akum, and something that it's not chashuv, that it's not ola al shulchan melachim, is also not have a din of bishul akum. So did you want to say something? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when it doesn't fall into the category of chumminess, of getting close to the guy, the fear of intermarriage, then did those heterim come out right in the beginning? Because they don't seem like that would make a difference as far as getting close to the guy.
So what are you saying? You're saying something very well, but so what are you trying? Just articulate just a little clearer what you want. You're saying maybe if it's,
if not a fear,
in other words, I go, I buy potato chips. I buy potato chips. Now the potato chips were cooked. Now I have no idea who the guy is. I'm not meeting him. You know, I'm not nowhere in his vicinity. I'm not marrying his daughter. You know, we don't know each other. We will never know each other. So is that heter? Is that, that's what you're asking?
Right. It's the ikur of why the mandate was made.
Right. If the ikur is why the mandate is made is for camaraderie, so then maybe it shouldn't apply. Right. So that's a discussion in the Achronim, and that's one of the heterim. A lot of the industrial corporations are cooking things, and these things that they cook, You know, you buy a simple, like discussing the poskim, potato chips. In the, you know, the fry, you buy tuna fish. You know, it's cooked. So what about Bishul? What about Bishul Akum? Forget the case I gave you. Where the case I gave you, they actually are going to meet the chef. He's right there. You know, he was very nice. He came early. You know, he did his job. He came early. He just was supposed to wait for the mashgiach to turn on the fire, and he didn't because he doesn't know. He doesn't. He meant well. A well-meaning, you know. I'll tell you. Like I'll give you another case of a well-meaning guy. I have a Talmud who was a Rav someplace out in Yupitsville, and the guy the was there working in the shul, and there was a mikveh there. Now we know the mikveh, you know, has the rain water and has the tap water. And then they connect the two with a hole in between. Now, when a person goes into the mikveh, he goes in, doesn't go into the regular rainwater because that stays there for a long time. The tap water they can clean out every day and put new tap water in, and it'll get attached to the rainwater, right? Hashaka, and then it'll be good. So the guy, he meant well. He saw all this dirty water. He saw all this dirty water. He said, ugh, and he drained it out. And there went the mikveh. He meant well, you know, so this person probably also meant very well. You know, I come early, the kids are probably very hungry, and I'm going to be, you know, and I'll be there for them. I'll cook them. He didn't realize that he, you know, well, it's well-meaning people. But there's an expression of the path, whatever, with good intention, you know, if you fill in the blanks, if you ever heard of that expression. Okay. Okay.
So you have all these caterers, the weddings, I've gone to the wedding in Passaic.
Let me hear about this wedding in Passaic.
Who were giving out the food by his brother's
boy.
Who cooked the food?
Who cooked the food?
Yeah, so I'm asking him. So, how do you do it?
Yeah, in other words.
So what's the answer?
Okay, I'm going to get it. Yeah, you go to weddings. I also, Baruch Hashem, we all go to weddings. We should go to more weddings.
So how are
we matter to go to weddings?
Yeah, okay. What's the answer?
The answer is, okay, I'm going to get to it. You're asking very well. Give me a second. You go straight to the point, right? Okay. Right. So I'll tell you. So, if you look here, on the first page here, the paragraph that begins, Ein Shigiras, that paragraph. So you have the different fonts here of the Mechaber and the Ramah. So if you look on the fourth line, a third line, Yesh Kol Kofsvili, the Hadlokas Ha'esh, Mahani, the Indian Bishul. That is the Ramah. That is Ashkenazic practice. Ashkenazic practice is that the Mashkiach comes in, he turns on the fire, right? And then he can go home. You know? He turns on the fire, goes home, and that's and then a guy would come and cook the food, that's okay. Because that's called Bishul Yisrael by the fact that the Yisrael had that involvement of turning on the fire. Yes?
But on a reality basis, how does the fact that a grown being lit that fire avoid the problem of camaraderie? It's all fine and good. Some nice shiva come in, lit the match, and now you've got every chef, from Iron Chef, whatever, standing there doing all the cooking. They're all goyim, or they're not Shomer Shabbos, if they happen to be Jews, and they're cooking. And how do you avoid it in camaraderie? Just because one nice, erlich guy lit fire.
Right. So in other words, we have to realize that when the Chachamim set up these halachas, they took into account what the concern is, and then they made their gedarim of how to go ahead. But I'll tell you, one second. You know, we skipped something, because I went straight to the Ramah. We should look first in the Mechaber. You know, the Mechaber, Sephardic practice. You know, Baruch Hashem, my parents, my father is Zichron Levracha, is an Ashkenazic Jew. My mother should live and be well as a Sephardic Jew. Our family is from Turkey. So I have a lot of Sephardic tradition in my life. You know, So the Sephardic Pesach Halacha very often different than Ashkenazic Halacha. So what is this? It says here at the beginning, Ein Shgiras Hatonim Mo'elis Ela B'Pasav Al Shar Tavshilin Ein Shgiras Hatonim Lo Lochus Ein Malav Lomid. See, this man you just mentioned, you have a good Sephardic head. He says, it doesn't matter. He says, it doesn't care. The Yeshiva Bachar opened the fire. You knew who's doing the cooking, who's putting the food on the thing and doing the cooking. So that's the Mechaber Paskins. That's not good enough. You're right. He agrees with you. It's the person who put the food on is doing the cooking. If he has to be Jewish. Sephardim, it's not easy to be a Sephardi. It's not easy.
Except on Pesach.
Yeah, maybe. Is it worth the kidney? I don't know. You should know I'm machmir to treat quinoa as kidneys, you should know. Not everyone is, but I happen to like quinoa. But I'm of the opinion that quinoa is kidneys. Not everyone agrees with me. Okay. But this is a big machlokas between the Mechaber and the Ramah, because the Mechaber holds that you need a Jewish chef to be there, and the Ramah says no, you can just have the Jew turn on the fire, and the guy could do the cooking. So according to the Sephardic tradition, many places Sephardim won't be able to eat because they don't follow the standard of the Bishul Akum of Rav Yosef Karo. What? Yeah. So it depends. So if you're a real hardcore, you know, the Sephardic community is a very interesting community. You know, they have their shitas and gzeiras, you know. It was just at the Shabbos table. We had a bunch of young men from Panama at our Shabbos table. We were having very interesting conversations. You know, one of the things is, you know, I went growing up to Yeshiva Flapish, which now is primarily a Sephardic yeshiva. When I was there, it was Rubo Ashkenaz, and the Sephardim were beginning to come in, and now at Mikochi, they get an Ashkenazic minion. So things of the world changed. But, what? So according to the Sephardic tradition, in those communities, I was saying, they don't even accept Gerim. You know, in the Syrian community, right? In the Syrian community, which is this community that Yeshiva Flapish has serviced for many years, even though they have their own stools, but there was a reason for it, because they felt that if they're going to let the Gerim in the community, so then all their boys will be marrying these people, and then you know there are concerns that they had for this. So the Sephardic tradition, so if you're a real hardcore Sephardi, yeah, you live life in an interesting, you won't be able to, most restaurants you won't be able to go to because they don't have a Jew there the whole day cooking. And most of it is Bishalakim according to the Mechaber.
If you're the Ashkenazi person turning on the fire and then leaving, how can you be sure that the going, if the gas goes out or the fire goes out, if they turn it on, then after that and continue cooking, I mean, shouldn't somebody be watching the fire all the time?
Yeah, okay, so they have all the... What? Yeah, by Fleishitz they have a Mashgiach Tamidi in the place. So there's going to be a Jewish person there, yeah. I remember, I'll tell you a story. You know, I live in Washington Heights on 186th Street. So there's every night I come home, used to daven Maariv 10 o'clock, I come home at 10:15. I come home, and on my block every night there is a bus. You know about the bus, the Hyman bus to Montreal. Anyone here from Montreal? The Hyman bus from Montreal. That was every night. It goes from my corner to Montreal. I once had to take it from one of my talmidim's chasanas on Motzei Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos at 12 o'clock, and then 7 hours later, I'm there. 7 hours later, I'm right there by the shul there to daven. So I remember I went there to Montreal. I got there 7 o'clock in the morning, time for shachris. I came into the shul, and there was a man there who was cooking, I guess, breakfast for the people in the shul. And he said to me, and he's a regular, you know, who davens there. He said to me, can you do me a favor? Can you, you know, he said to me, I'm not Shomer Shabbos. And can you do a favor and turn on the man who's davening, you know, every morning in the minyan. But he said, I'm not Shomer Shabbos. Do me a favor, turn on the, that's a whole question is, because Bishul Akum means Akum. Just because a person is not Shomer Shabbos, even is not Shomer Shabbos, but for Hesia, which sometimes it means that he has a din like a guy, does that apply to Bishul Akum or not? Is a whole discussion. But I guess he felt it did. So he was machmir that who he asked me to turn on the fire for him. Oh, so what do we do here? So what do we do for the Sfarim? What do we do for these boys in the Lag BaOmer trip who showed up to the Lag BaOmer trip, and all of a sudden, it was all cooked. Kosher, great hashkacha, but even great hashkachas sometimes have mishaps. And that's what happened. So again, we're waiting on the phone for a response. Oh, so take a look here. 1, 2, 3, and the fourth paragraph, the Yesh Mishamatir. Yesh Mishamatir b'shvachas shalanu. V'yesh Mishaoser, afil b'dievet. So the question is, if the person is a hired employee, it's a worker. So if it's a worker, a hired employee, so maybe, again, you're lacking in that level of camaraderie because it's a job. It's not a friendship or something like that, that you're my neighbor, you're cooking something for me, you know. So maybe the whole din doesn't apply. Now, this halacha... You see, the first halacha that has to, if it's not eaten raw, it has to be olah shulchan malacha, that's in the Gemara. So those leniencies are, you know, 100% in the Gemara. These are later leniencies that are in the Rishonim, but even things that are in Rishonim, which are very reputable, but there's still a question what the Rishonim meant, etc. But one possibility is that the din of Bishul Akum doesn't apply to these hired workers, these shvachos. And in other words, they would apply to somebody who's not a hired worker, just a friend, a nice, friendly Gentile who's who wants to have friendship with you, etc. And somebody who's just shvachas, maybe it doesn't apply. So if that would be the case, and it's a discussion, should we follow this, should we not follow this, maybe b'dieved. So I was thinking that in this, so some say that perhaps for Sfardim, again, a hardcore Sfardi will not touch this food. That was made by, if it wasn't, Bishul Yisrael, Kipshuto, no shortcuts, hardcore Sfardi, but not as hardcore. And he wants to eat at a kosher restaurant or a simcha or something like that. So some will rely. I think Rav Avadi Yosef has this, and Rav Abadi has this to make it sort of like a sfek sfeka, like a double suffix, which would mean that we have two studded to assume that it would be permissible, namely that maybe the halacha is like the Ramah, that you could just, and even if you say that the halacha is like the Mechaber, that you need to actually put the food on by a Jew, but maybe that doesn't apply if it's an individual who is a hired worker. So that's one of the heterim, and then when I got that phone call, I said that this is a shas hatchak, and therefore there's a phrase like Rav Shech always mentions the phrase shas hatchak ediyevedami, that something b'shas hatchak, as Rav Shech explained, we permit something that's normally only mutter b'dieved, we permit even l'chatchila, because it's a shas hadchak. So I was thinking that situation, that would be what they should rely on in this situation where where it was cooked by the Gentiles and the kids had no food, to rely on that opinion, even though it's not b'dieved. B'dieved means it happened already. It didn't happen yet. You didn't eat the food yet, right? But that's the concept. Like Rav Shechter mentioned, the concept of shas hadchak b'dieved on me means it's something that's in a hard pressed situation. We're going to permit something lachatchila that normally is only permissible b'dieved, and that was, I thought, that's considered shas hadchak. I felt for the people, the kids that were on this trip to permit. And then that was one part of the kula. And the second part of the kula, I felt, is part of the shas hadchak is that for the Rebbeim also to partake. Because I didn't think it was right that that the kids are going to eat and the Rebbeim saying, we can't eat. It doesn't work that way. In other words, if the kids are going to eat, then they have to, the whole team has to rely on this on this kula of these the sheet. That was what I told them. Okay, so that's the there's another question also. There's one opinion of the Ravid that says that maybe it only applies if the bishul is taking place in the house of the goy. But if it's taking place in the Beis Yisrael, then the whole din of Bishul Akum doesn't apply. That's not in the Gemara, this kula. This kula is in one of the Rishonim. And in fact, if you look in the first piece here in Shulchan Aruch, he goes out of his way to say not to rely on that kula. He says, Afilu b'kli Yisrael u'beis Yisrael osor. Even if it's in the Beis Yisrael. Why is he saying that? Because he knows that there's an opinion that says it's mutter. So he's coming to tell you, don't rely don't rely on that opinion. But again, that's another thing to put in the discussion. This comes up a lot if you have a non-Jewish worker who's in the house and sometimes does cooking for the kids or for this and that. So again, it's not something that we really, the Shulchan Aruch says beferish, that we shouldn't rely on that. But again, the question is what to rely on when there's a Shas Avchak, when there's a Rebbeitim, when there's a Hefzer Meruba, etc. And then, another point that we should think about is what about once the Bishul Akum took place, are the Kalim now treif? Do you have the Kasha, the Kalim? What would you think? Should you have the kasha, the kalim? What do you say? You don't think you should. Why? Let me hear what you have to say.
Because it's not that the food has a problem in and of itself. It's just that the achila was forbidden.
Right. In other words, to formulate it in what we call the Lamdusha terminology, he's saying it's not an Issa Heftza, it's just an Issa Gavra. Right, so that's what Rabbi Goldberg is saying here. That it's not an Issa Heftza. In other words, it's kosher food. Right? It's kosher food. But you're not allowed to eat it. Because we're afraid. So that's called what we call in the Lamdush terminology an Issa Gavra. But not an Isser Heftza. So that's what you're saying. Does anyone want to corroborate or disagree? Or okay. So let's leave what it says in Shulchan Aruch. The last piece here. The second, on the next, on the side. Kalim shebishul lam olik acham lefaneinu dvarm sheish behem yishum bishulei akum. So the first thing he says, Tzrichim Hechsher. That's the first opinion. V'yesh omrim she'enam tzrichim Hechsher. So the two opinions. Do you need Hechsher or don't you need Hechsher? So who's this machlokas between? The Rashba and the Ra'o. There's a sefer called Torah Sabayis, which is a classic sefer. On part of it's on Yoredeya topics and other topics. And the Sefer is written by the Rashba, and it's called Torah Sabayis. He built the Bayis. So the Ra'ah, one of the other Rishonim, he writes his disagreements on the side of the page, and he calls his commentary Berek HaBayis, meaning the house that you built has some cracks in the wall, you know, some leaking, you know, like I'm in a building, sometimes when there's leaking, I hear from the neighbor downstairs, you know, calls the super, says, it's a leak here. So that's what the Berek HaBayis says. You built this big house, the Rashba. Your house is full of cracks, and you need a Berek HaBayis. So the Rashba says, what are you talking about? And then he wrote his defense. And what did he call it? Mishmeres HaBayis. And that's he said, my house is good. So the Rashba says you need the Hechsher Kalim. You need Hechsher Kalim. And the Ra'ah says no. The Ra'ah says no. So Rabbi Goldberg said, because it's an Issa Gavra, not an Issa Chefzer. So if the Ra'ah says it a little bit differently. He says, let's think about it. Why are we answering it? Because of the camaraderie. But the camaraderie comes from the piece of meat. In other words, the fact that the tom of the meat now goes into your dishes, and now you're going to eat something later in the day, you're going to cook rice in that same pot. So the tom from what the goy cooked is going to go into the rice. It's not going to do it to make the shidduch. Maybe if you give it a nice piece of meat, then we could talk about it. But the fact that I'm going to have rice and I'm going to have some tam from. So he says they didn't ask the tam from Bishul Akum because that's not enough to cut the deal. So that's what he says. In other words, the concept of tam doesn't apply to Bishul Akum. So that's why we kasher. Why do we kasher something? Because kasher something was the tam, the taste from the non-kosher thing went into the pot, and then I'm going to use it later. It's gonna come out and going to forbid it. So so these are the two opinions. So usually we have a klal. The question is when the Shulchan Aruch quotes two opinions, so he leaves us in confusion. You know, don't give me two opinions. Just tell me what I can do. So the Shulchan Aruch sometimes does, you know, gives two opinions. So one of the klalim is, if the first opinion he just writes, he doesn't say Yesh Omrim. He just writes it as this is the given. And then he writes V'yesh Omrim, so usually we say Stam Yesh Omrim, Halacha Kistam, and then that would imply that you would have to be Machmer. And usually in Yerudea, whatever the Rashba says, usually he usually wins. That's a general klal. Even though the Ra'ah is very fascinating, like Rosh Hashanah said, he always says this interesting chidushim, but the Rashba, you know. I'll tell you something about the Rashba. They once asked the Rav Chaim Volozhiner, he's a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. He says, tell me, your Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, was he on the level of the Ramban? So he thought for a minute, he says, like Ramban, no, he's not on the like the Ramban. Ulaika HaRashba. Ulaika HaRashba. But that's the, so that's the, Rav Abadi has a tshuva where he's makel on being machsher, the kelim. But the simple pshat in the Shulchan Aruch is that you have to kasher the kelim. And then there's a famous piece he writes here. But what if it's klicheris? What if it's pottery or some old you know, china or something like that? And you put the meat. So you can't kasher klicheris, right? So, but the Yerushalmi says, you even if you can't kasher klicheris, if you do hagola three times, that's why the old minig in certain thing with dishwashers was, you know, that Rav Moshe gave heterim. If you have a porcelain dishwasher, so Rav Moshe's shita was you wait a year and you do three cycles. That was because based on this halacha of hagola gimel pa'amim, if you're assuming that the porcelain's like cheris, which requires its own discussion, but that idea of doing running it three cycles is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch only over here in Bishul Akum, because it's only by dinim derabbanan that we have this cool of doing three times hagola, to run this cycle. Because this comes up a lot, especially people go into new houses, new apartments, and there's a dishwasher, and they want to know, could they use the dishwasher or not use the dishwasher? So that's part of the discussion of running it three cycles, waiting. How long do you have to wait? Moshe required a year, you know, because the Chacham Tzvi, he has this tshuva that after a year, you know, it's everything's okay after a year. You know, he says it again. Not all cases does he say. Chacham Tzvi has the very fascinating tshuvas. He became popular in this generation because he's the one who said that when you go to Eretz Israel, you don't have to keep 2 days of Yontif. So that's why in this generation they even made T-shirts. I follow Chacham Tzvi. You know, like Chacham Tzvi has chumras also. Like he doesn't permit to use a hot mikvah on Shabbos. Chacham Tzvi's shita that you know. So that Chacham Tzvi is not so popular. People like the Chacham Tzvi of the Yom Tov Sheni, that became very, you know, this generation, people aren't so eager to have Americans who are going just for Yom Tov coming back. They're not so eager to keep the... Okay, but that requires... All these things require their own Hashem. So let's just review what we talked about so far. Then, I don't know. We talked about the Bishlakim, that the Bishlakim has to be, we're afraid that if you eat the goy's food, even though it's kosher food, we're afraid that you might come to marry into the family, or maybe he put in some non-kosher things in the food. And we said there are two main heterim, the heter of that if you can eat the food raw, then it's okay, because then the bishul is not so meaningful. And number two, if it's not something chashuv, like some say, maybe that's the heter for the potato chips. You know, potato chips, and that's it's not such a chashuv machel, so it's not all al shulchan malachim. So maybe it wouldn't be a din of bishlakim. Then someone raised the question about industrial things, that you know, where you don't even meet the person. Right, that's a discussion. If not, the Greenblatt has a discussion, and other poskim talk about that. Maybe the whole din of Bishul Akum shouldn't apply in an industrial. That's the question. What's the heter of, you know, the tuna fish and the potato chips and all these things? Is it because they're not so chashuv, or is it because you don't even have any connection with the person in that? Yeah, right. That's an excellent question. Yeah, I'm not a sushi eater, but most people are. You know. So that's the question: is that the same type of, did you have to eat that particular type of fish to make it ein olah shulchan malachim? In other words, Okay, and then we talked about the question of shvachos, of when you have hired workers, maybe that doesn't apply in that situation, because the hired workers, again, you don't have that relationship, so it's not like you're going to now cause this relationship. So, and that was what I thought maybe you could rely on in B'shas HaKak, when these boys had the caterer cook the food before the Jew got there. And then we discussed the machlokas between the Mechab and Ramah. What does the Jew have to do? Is it enough that he turns on the fire? Or he has, that's not sufficient. He has to put the food on. And the fact that some Jew came in the morning and is not going to do it, the Sfardim are machmir in that, Ashkenazim or not. And then the question is, could the Sfardim, you know, like Rav Avadi Yosef and Rabbi say, maybe use as a sfek sfeka to add the other idea that if it's done by a professional worker and not a friend, to make that as a tzad kula, and that's what some permit. As I said, the diehards would not permit such a thing, because the purists would say no. You know, no sfek, no, you know, from a Sephardi, you know, Sephardi Tahor, you know, and then the question of whether you have to do Hechsher Kelim or not, which is the two opinions of the Machlokas between the Rashba and the Ra'ah. Rav Yitzchak Rabbani has a Tshuva Ways Mekel, but the simple pshat in the Shulchan Aruch is L'chumra like the Rashba, as I told you, when it comes to Yeridea, the Rashba usually wins the day. But that's the whole discussion. And then we discussed the idea, if you did Bishul Akum in a Kli Cheres, whether a Kli Cheres normally you can't kasher, so could you just do Hagala three times? And that's the Yerushalmi that says by certain dinim derabbanan, you could be machsher it by doing Hagala three times. And that is the discussion about kashering a dishwasher by running the cycles three times. Okay, more questions?
I apologize in advance for this question.
Okay. Okay, it's okay.
I just noticed in the source sheets, it refers to non-Jew, it always says, Obed Kohav.
Yeah.
So if you have a non-Jew has shown merit to show that this is coming up. That is that in any way, why is it always going to be able to help? It's not all non-Jews.
Right, that's true, but, right. But he doesn't mean it to be taken. In other words, if he's not Jewish and you can't marry him, that's even if he's a Ben Noach, that keeps it still would be, you know, included in this. Okay, but it's interesting that you point that out. It's always good to notice the different things. Right. Some things were censored, you know. So, you know, sometimes the references to non-Jews were censored and how they were, or you know, sometimes they weren't, sometimes they were, etc. Okay, it's very nice to see you all. Okay, hopefully we'll see each other later in the week, Bez Hashem. Good to see you.